TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Greg Palast, Who Won the War on Iraq? The author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy answered that question at his April 2003 stop in Berkeley, California. Was it the Carlyle Group, Barrick Gold, or Lockheed Martin, or all of the above? Greg Palast, whose films, books, and articles have a huge and devoted audience in Europe, can't get his work shown or printed in the mass media in the U.S., where he was born. His friend, Jello Biafra, the lead singer of the band The Dead Kennedys, offers an explanation why that is so. He introduced Palast to a standing room audience at Cody's Books in Berkeley. Here is Jello Biafra.
And it turns out one of the more notorious muckraking reporters for The Guardian, as well as the BBC, is an American who until recently was an expatriate who went over there because no one would dare publish him over here. After years and years of corporations buying up the very media outlets that used to act as a fourth branch of government and police them to some degree through exposés. So this journalist went overseas to not only publish in print, but they've even allowed him on television, something you would never see over here. He's exposed connections between the Bush family and the Bin Laden family and their respective business interests. He actually dug into the documents as to how exactly the Bush mob stole the election in Florida, to the point that Florida's Secretary of State, Katherine Harris, who somehow avoided a jail sentence for being in charge of running an election and managing one of the candidates' campaigns at the same time, she's now in Congress, by the way, she called Greg Palast twisted and maniacal. And a White House spokesman once said, "We hate that SOB." And I can see how that would make a reporter feel like they're actually doing their job for once. The key is there's not a lot of investigative journalists left, ones who will go after documents and actually take the time to learn how to read and understand them. For the mass media, my attitude is don't hate the media, become the media. And one of the great primers we have is Greg's book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And to my own pleasant surprise, it isn't something that only people in the Bay Area have ever heard of. It's on the New York Times bestseller list. And without further ado, we'll quote the Baltimore Chronicle here. "No one has investigated the Bush clan like Greg Palast yet lived to write about it." Greg Palast, here he is.
Jello Biafra, yeah! George Bush, did you hear our president, the high noon speech? Get out of town, Saddam, right? So we should go back into history. 3 weeks ago, you know, a long time ago. This is amnesia about why we went into Iraq. The president said that he wanted, I don't know if you remember this, he wanted to talk directly to the Iraqi people. You thought he'd say something like, you know, like, "Our boys are coming in to liberate you, you know, don't shoot at them." Instead, he said, "Do not destroy oil wells." Okay. He also said this, "Here's why we're going into Iraq." He says he's now going to go after those who have, quote, "aided, trained, and harbored terrorists, including operatives of Al-Qaeda." I'm thinking, shit, he's going to bust his daddy, right? Think about that, right? You know, I was thinking, Easter dinner, spread them, Dad. You know, it's like, read Barbara Wright's. It could have happened that way, right? He said, "There war has no certainty except the certainty of sacrifice." And he would know. You know, he was a war hero during Vietnam. I don't know. Wait! I don't know why you're laughing. He was a fighter pilot in The Top Gun, the Tom Cruise, the Texas Air Guard, right? During Vietnam, you know, that was the Texas Air Guard's kind of a weekend war heroes army for, you know, warriors who hate the sight of, you know, the sight of blood, especially their own. Our president said he defeated Saddam. We've defeated Al Qaeda, right? Because we got them now after we went to Baghdad. And we have a third front with the war against affirmative action. He said no one should get their position except by merit. And I, hey, listen, yeah, I don't make this stuff up. And so I checked it. And how did he get that job at the Texas Air Guard? He took a test. He actually did take a test. Out of a possible 100, he scored 25. I looked this up. You know, do you think there might have been some affirmative action phone call by his powerful congressman, Daddy's Daddy, who was so quick to send other men's son into battle? If you read the book, that's a cheap thing. I got to tell you, you got to read the book to get the answer to that. It involves $23 million payment by a company named G-Tech. But I don't want anyone to think that our president is a chicken coward, draft dodging bastard who will send other people to die for his beliefs and ratings numbers. That would be I don't want to say that. So what I do want to talk about is who's won. War's over. Who won? Who won part one in 91? Who won the Gulf War in 91? Going back in time, first of all, it was democracy, right? Democracy in Kuwait. If you're just like we're bringing democracy to Iraq today. Actually, where is that thing? I like this one. U.S. purges capital of fake mayor. You realize that there was some goddamn Iraqi who thought that he could be mayor, you know, as opposed to, you know, he didn't ask General Garner if it was. The actually, you know who the mayor is, by the way, of Baghdad, the mayor of Baghdad, is Barbie Boudin. So that's why this is outrageous that an Iraqi would want to be mayor. Actually, what most people don't realize, we have appointed a military junta of two used generals. Jake Garner's one, some unforgettable corporate guys too. And Barbie Boudin has taken over what's called the central zone of Iraq, which is basically Baghdad. And when I was talking about, hunting for al-Qaeda, when I read that, and she's taken over in Baghdad, I said, where does that name rings a bell? And sure enough, I look it up. The name John O'Neill, he was the head of the FBI's investigation of al-Qaeda when the World Trade Center was attacked in 93, and he continued on after the trial. He went to Yemen to hunt down al-Qaeda because they'd killed all these guys on the USS Cole. And he started asking questions like, well, where'd they get their money? You know, like this guy Khalid Muhammad, who planned the logistics of the attack. And he didn't put the hijackings and the coal bombing on his credit card, right? He got the money from somewhere. O'Neill started asking us questions, and he was blocked. And so he resigned in disgust from the FBI and became actually head of security at the World Trade Center and died in the building. And the person who blocked him from investigating the funding of al-Qaeda was Ambassatrix Barbie Boudin, who is now mayor of Baghdad. Okay, and so, which is interesting because Bush is looking for, you know, now he's finally got the evidence that there's an Iraqi government official who has been harboring and protecting al-Qaeda. See, and you thought there was no connection. So who won Gulf War I? George Bush, when he left the White House, like two-thirds of the American people said leave. When he left, he took some of the Oval Office stationery with him, and he wrote a letter. He wrote a letter to the democratic government of Kuwait. Remember, they were going to have democracy then, too. They had women driving cars, if you remember, and they were going to have if we just got rid of the evil Saddam out of their capital, they would have a democratic monarchy. You know, it's like 12 years later, we're still waiting for the election returns from Kuwait. We also, you know, we brought democracy to Afghanistan too, right? Right? One warlord, one vote, right? And so now we're bringing it to democracy to Iraq. But in the meantime, so in Kuwait, he didn't bring up in this letter any embarrassing stuff about democracy. But he did say, could you please give an oil drilling concession to my friends at Chevron Oil Corporation? Very interesting, because presidents, and Bush swore he would never lobby for a U.S. corporation after he left, or a corporation after he left the White House. And he didn't, in his defense, he said, I didn't take any money from Chevron. Of course, his son got about $600,000 into his campaign war chest. You know, but I don't want you to, you know, think that there's a connection between, you know, Bush asking a favor of the Kuwaitis and Chevron giving the money. There is no connection, ever. But who just won the war now? Who's won the war now?
Not over yet.
Well, there's many fronts, yes. They're coming here. I heard Bechtel. How about Carlyle Group? Yeah, if you look in the budget, you know, $80 billion extra appropriation, look at the whole appropriation. You know, an all-war, all-the-time budget. There's $450 million for Carlyle Corporation for a weapon it has called the Crusader. Another, you know, interesting name for a weapon as we're invading another Muslim country. But besides its marketing problems, the Crusader has another problem, which is it's a self-propelled howitzer. It's like a tank. But the problem is that it doesn't propel itself well. It needs a bulldozer in front of it to clear the way. And so even the military dictator of Kuwait, Tommy Franks, who's head of the army, didn't want this weapon because he couldn't get, you know, guys to go into the bulldozer. And so instead of paying them $450 million to make the tank, they're paying Carlyle $450 million not to make the tank. They call it winding down. They get nearly $500 million, which has nothing to do with the fact at all that George Herbert Walker Bush is on the payroll of Carlyle as their advisor and as their representative to Saudi Arabia and Asia. And that the son, Sonny, also was on the W. Our president was on the payroll of Carlyle as well. He was on the board of a subsidiary of one of the Cater Air operation of Carlyle. And I don't want anyone thinking, by the way, that he got that, that there was some affirmative action involved in that. He got that through his business acumen. Nothing to do with his father being president at the time. And it didn't matter. And despite his business credentials, the subsidiary quickly went bankrupt. But what the hell? But then there's also, other winners, Halliburton, that's obvious. But there's also less obvious. I was thinking of Lockheed, which has the V-class, the Virginia-class submarine, which was it was designed to hunt Soviet subs. So it's in the budget now, which there are no Soviet subs. But I called Lockheed and asked them about the need for this weapon. And they said, well, it's been redesigned for the new war. And I said, well, what do you mean? They said, well, you know, like Afghanistan and Iraq. I said, Afghanistan, right? Let's show them a map. It's landlocked, right, for the summer. And then they showed me, yeah, but Iraq, if you look at the map of Iraq, there is at the very bottom of this little beach. You see, if you look at the map, and they can land, they said that they could land commandos on the beach to go after the nests of bad guys, right, the nests of terrorists. I said, how do you get the submarine to the beach? You know, I mean, how do you sneak it up there? Because it's like about, you know, 112 times the size of Cody's books. You know, it's like, and they said, Mr. Pallas, don't be ridiculous. We don't bring the submarine up to the beach. We've reconfigured the torpedoes to put in 9 Marines into the torpedoes. And that's true. Yep. Our president, it's $1.5 billion a boat. And our president thought this was so neat, he's ordered 3 dozen. So, you know, a lot of winners. Hey, the other winners, how about Richard Pearl, who went into business, who came up with the idea of the war in Iraq, as a response to the September 11th, 2001 attacks. Now, of course, he published his plan in 1998, but we're not going to quibble over chronology. He's a winner. He went into business with that other patriot, Adnan Khashoggi, the Saudi arms dealer, the bag man for the Iran-Contra scandal. In fact, my friend Cy Hirsch, who reported this in the New Yorker, was being sued in Britain over this story. And I was interested in this because Pearl had to resign as head of the Defense Department's Advisory Committee, chairman. He's still on it because of his relationship with this creepy Saudi arms dealer. And that brought to mind another story. I was thinking, you know, I was looking through the donors for the election, the so-called, because it was, you know, the guy that lost the vote got the White House, but he had the most money. Bush, the Republicans spent about $440 million, nearly $500 million, to take the White House. So it was more, you know, not so much an election as an auction. I want to know who the winning bidders were. And I looked down the list. Number one, Enron, first donor. Exxon, second donor. Southern Company, another bunch of sweet, third. Anyway, on the list was Barrick Gold Mining of Canada. I said, what the heck? Why would Canadians be, you know, supporting our democratic process? And lo and behold, their senior international advisor, Mr. I'll Never Lobby for a Corporation, is George Bush Sr. Okay? Interesting. Now, I'm thinking, why? How did he come to the attention? First of all, who is Barrick Goldmine? Look in the phone. There's no Joe Barrick in the Canadian phone book. It's founded and funded by that well-known Canadian, Adnan Khashoggi, which raises, of course, the issue: Does Bush Sr. now have to, resign as presidential father? Anyway, I'm looking, and there is just before he left the White House, the Bush administration changes the rules for laying claims to gold mines under the old Prospector Gold Rush Act, where, you know, miners used to say, "Eureka, I found it, the nugget of gold," run to the claims office and put down a buck and put down $5 to get an acre of land to prospect on. Under special expedited procedure, one corporation was able to pick up George Bush and take him to the claims office and say, "Eureka, we found him," and they put down $10,000 and got a claim to the largest gold mine in the hemisphere, $10 billion worth of gold ore. $10,000 claim, Barrick Gold Mining. Then they give Poppy Bush a job. Okay? Now, I report this in The Observer, George Orwell's old paper, right? And Bush's guys sue the paper, which is frightening because we don't have that First Amendment. And under British law, in which the truth is not a defense, this is why Richard Pearl is suing Hirsch in Britain, not here. The truth is not a defense because I would have defamed them, because what they are saying is that any reasonable person reading this set of facts would conclude that they're connected. See, the job and the gold mine. So that's what I want to, let's... W got the donations and Barrick got the gold mine. The public got the shaft. Daddy got the job. There's no connection, see? I've signed a paper and let my paper sign a paper to the court saying that there are no connections. So I'm working on that. Keep that in mind so I don't want to get in trouble. But that still didn't answer a question like why they gave him... still kept him on the payroll, because what do you do with a used president, right? I mean, especially, lost all his votes. And so I'm looking on their website, and they say that the international advisors led by Bush and Brian Mulroney of Canada. Yeah, right, the Canadian, obviously here. I don't know why you'd laugh about Mulroney. You should burst into tears. And for all those reasons, by the way, my book may not be sold in Canada. I won't allow it to be sold in Canada. The gold mining company was able to obtain, with Bush's help and his buddies, a concession to obtain gold in a field in Tanzania. And I said, well, what's the big deal? I thought you just bid for it or buy it. Uh-uh. Political problem. See, there are already gold miners, the guys with the little caps and mules and pans and Eureka. They had permits Tanzanians to mine the gold there. And so that made the property worthless to Barrick, which is trying to buy it from another company. It was worthless. So the company there, so while they're bargaining, the company they're trying to buy it from decides that they'll make it worthwhile to Barrick by removing, by clearing the property of those miners. And they do so by running bulldozers across the property one night, you know, boom, with military police firing weapons behind the bulldozers. So that they got the idea. They smash all their equipment down. They smash through all their houses, level their houses, and they fill in all their mining pits. And like 30,000 or more miners are chased out of the gold fields, except for 50, because 50 gold miners were still in the pits when they were sealed up. Yeah, you read that in the Chronicle, I can see. So I reported that in Orwell's old paper, and they sued us for saying it. I said, well, look, I have your denial, but I'll, you know, tell me more. They said, it's a false story. Okay, fine. Give me your evidence. What they want me to do, they said, no evidence. We want you to sign a statement that, no one died in the peaceful clearance of the mines. I could happily confirm no one died in the peaceful clearance of the mines. I said, I'd be very happy to confirm that. What's your evidence? The evidence is, we're billionaires, you're not signed. I said, I need a little more evidence than that. So which is not so easy given the laws here. So my paper encouraged a top human rights attorney out of the World Resources Institute in Washington named Tundu Lissu, L-I-S-S-U. I want you to know his name, Lissu, to go and check it out. Now, he was perfectly qualified, not only because of his international reputation, but because he was had a Tanzanian law degree, and he spoke Swahili, so he could speak to the witnesses. He sends back from the minefield photographs of crushed corpses. He sends back videotape of body parts being exhumed, and witness statements from one guy who spent 4 days digging himself out of a pit. His friends suffocated. So I bring this to Barrick. I say, so, what's your response? Our response is, you sign that you can happily confirm that no one died in the peaceful clearance of the mines. I said, I can't do that. Now, it was costing a fortune to my paper, to me. I don't know if you know John Pilger, a great British journalist, but he came in like the wrath of God and said, you have to back up Palace. You know, Palace is a pain in the ass, but he's a worthwhile pain in the ass. And I was, you know, it's like, it was pretty grim, you know. In fact, 60 Minutes has actually looked at this story. You'll see it maybe. Right, 2017 is your guess. It's kind of, we're going to take an office pool of what century you're going to see this report on. So the problem was, I really couldn't sign because Tundu Lissu, before he left Tanzania, he and his law partners in Dar es Salaam held a press conference. They said, in Swahili, but in so many words, approximately, we now have evidence which suggests that there ought to be an investigation of the clearance of the mine sites at Bulyanhulu. And for that, he was charged with sedition. Okay? At Bush's mines.
Where?
Charged in Tanzania, right? Serious stuff. By the way, I do want to note that Bush left the company in 99, replaced by Andy Young, who then came to the opening of the mine with Barrick. He stood on the spot where the miners were buried. And I don't know if he took his check right there or what. That's another story. But anyway, so Tundu, as it turns out, though, had gotten his way out of the country. He was in Europe, and he got his way back to Washington. He didn't even know the charges were brought down because he was out of the country. So I thought he was safe. I assumed he was safe. And I said, okay, we got together in Washington. And I said, Tundu, what are you going to do now? His wife was pregnant with twins. I said, what are you going to do after the kids are born? He said, I'm going back to Tanzania. So you go back to Tanzania, they're going to arrest you. He said, if I'm lucky, right? He did go back. He was arrested. He's been in and out of prison. His partners, their homes have been ransacked. A member of parliament who questioned what was going on was beaten and hospitalized. And so what we have to do, this, the wars continue, okay? And so I want you to go to my website and keep track of what's going on, www.gregpalast.com, G-R-E-G-P-A-L-A-S-T. Get the stories out. I've taken this section of the book, in fact, put it on my website so you can, and when I say put it on my website, give it to Utney Reader, and so you can just spread it around, okay? The more you say his name, the more likely he stays alive, okay? That's how it works, okay? We have to keep meeting like this, see? Part of the book is kind of us, is as much information as a set of instructions. It's an obligation. See, once you know something, it's kind of like you're stuck now. You're stuck with doing it. See, that was the trick during the war in Vietnam here in Berkeley, where this was the first school that started the teach-ins. Because what happens is once you know, then you're obligated. See, if you don't know, we don't know what's going on in Buchenwald, right? If you don't know, you're not obligated. Once you know, you're obligated. Now you know, okay? So now you got to do. Okay, you got the name, you got to act.
That was the first half of a talk by the American investigative reporter and filmmaker Greg Palast. His most recent book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, describes in detail how the 2000 presidential election was rigged to the advantage of George W. Bush. In fact, you will hear in the upcoming second half of this program how ChoicePoint, the company that might run our future elections, eliminated thousands, mainly African Americans, from the voter rolls in Florida. You can find more information on Greg Palast's website, www.gregpalast.com. That's gregpalast.com. Or go to the link on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Greg Palast writes for the British paper The Guardian and makes films for the BBC. His investigative work cannot be shown or reported on in the mass media of the U.S., where he was born. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can get information how to order a copy of this program with Greg Palast by calling us. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.